Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The Alaska House of Representatives will take more time before beginning the final debate on its version of the state budget. KTOO and Alaska Public Media report that House Speaker Louise Stutes deferred action on the budget yesterday after Minority Caucus Republicans protested not having dozens of their amendments heard. Early in a marathon day of floor session Saturday, the Alaska House rejected a proposal to pay PFDs of more than $3,000 this year. Big Lake Republican Representative Kevin McCabe proposed the budget amendment to pay the dividends based on a formula in state law at an estimated cost of more than $2 billion.
This is simple. We either follow the law, we are going to vote for a full PFD, or we're not going to vote for a full PFD.
In an effort to show what it would take to balance the state budget with full dividends without overdrawing the permanent fund earnings reserve, Anchorage Republican Representative Sarah Rasmussen proposed an amendment that would cut state agency spending by an amount equal to the cost of full PFDs.
But the reality is, Alaskans across the state are still asking for services. The MATSU is still asking for troopers. Anchorage is asking for K-12 education. Fairbanks wants the University of Alaska funded. Kenai Peninsula wants their roads plowed. Members on this floor have requested the roads being plowed. Coastal Alaska wants their ferries. Rural Alaska wants affordable heat.
Rasmussen ultimately withdrew the proposal, saying it would cause legal problems. But Sitka Democratic Representative Jonathan Christ-Tompkins said he appreciated the intent.
When you spend down the permanent fund unsustainably, everybody loses. If you like dividends, you lose. You're not going to be able to pay dividends in the future. If you care about ferries or the silver tip maintenance station on the Kenai or whatever your priority is, you lose. You lose. Everybody loses when we start spending down the permanent fund.
The full PFD amendment failed by an evenly split 20-20. The state announced 138 new Alaska resident COVID-19 cases Friday. Among the cases confirmed Thursday were 34 in Anchorage, 24 in Fairbanks, 21 in Wasilla, and 16 in North Pole. Elsewhere in the interior, Delta Junction and Healy each had one new case. There were also two new non-resident cases statewide. The DHSS reported 8 new virus hospitalizations, with 47 diagnosed and 10 suspected COVID-19 patients in Alaska hospitals. 6 patients were on ventilators. Medical workers at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital say capacity is being strained by a surge of COVID-19 patients. In a report to the Greater Fairbanks Community Hospital Foundation Board Friday, local medical executives said they are demoralized by the failure of some community members to take the disease seriously. KUAC's Robin reports.
The hospital is reporting record high admissions of coronavirus disease, even more than the surge last November. About 18% of the admissions at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital have COVID-19. Dr. Barbara Creighton, who has been attending many of those patients, says the surge is preventable.
There is the disconnect. You know, we have businesses open, school buses flying, restaurants are going, and we have visitors happening, yet we have our highest case rate. And so we're like, does anybody see this? This place is on fire with COVID.
People hospitalized for COVID in the last year were generally elderly, and many died. But that demographic is nearly 70% immunized in the state, so fewer elderly Alaskans are getting sick. The patients admitted in the last weeks are younger, and they are not fully vaccinated.
Really coming fast now, and that's the most worrisome thing for me because it's a different demographic. These are young people cardiac arresting before they come into the hospital. These are middle-aged white guys, sorry to say that, but it really is that demographic that hasn't gotten around to getting vaccinated or doesn't really feel like they need vaccination. They want to see what the vaccine is going to do before they take it. Those are the people that we're seeing come in with COVID.
Shelley Ebenall, the CEO of Foundation Health Partners, the nonprofit that runs the hospital, says the staff is working through a change in patient response.
This new group of patients, some of these folks, these are generalizations, so be careful with that, are folks that are anti-vaxxers, anti-maskers, and they don't believe that they have COVID or they're sick because of it. And our staff is getting some very angry folks.
Dr. Creighton says treatments have changed. The workhorse therapy has become high-flow oxygen and non-invasive ventilation where there's no tube down the patient's airway, and they can eat and talk. But treatment is still only supportive. There's no cure for COVID-19. There's just a long wait while each patient's lungs recover.
And we're seeing them stay longer because they're not dying. They're actually staying for 2-3 weeks and turning around, which I've really never been more proud of. You know, this could be our finest hour.
She says the hospital is running out of non-invasive ventilators as patients fill up the COVID wing. Dr. Angelique Ramirez, Chief Medical Officer for Foundation Health Partners, says a month ago the hospital had several days with no COVID-19 patients at all. Now the urgent care walk-in at Tanana Valley Clinic, as well as the FMH emergency department, are seeing several COVID patients each day. And at the hospital, 10 to 12 folks are in the COVID beds each night. The entire second floor of the South Wing is only COVID patients.
I don't know that we've had such a dramatic change in 1 month before.
Ramirez reported to the Foundation board how younger people are spreading the disease faster. She says right now the borough has a testing positivity rate of almost 10%.
This is the highest it's ever been. You can see that it's a sharp uptick. And what this tells us is that we are not capturing by testing everybody who's positive. The challenge is if they don't know that they're sick, they are out in the community spreading it.
Ramirez says confidence and hope comes from factors that are present now that weren't part of the equation last November. For example, 70% of the FHP staff is vaccinated, unlike last November and December, when many were sick at home or quarantining because they'd been exposed to someone with COVID-19. Also different is other Alaska hospitals can take patients from the interior if FMH becomes overwhelmed.
So we're the hotspot. It's nice to know that other places have capacity, but the reality is still, we are the only hospital in the interior.
CEO Shelley Ebenall says the hospital staff is deflated by the surge in patients and the community's not taking easy measures to fend off what has become preventable.
They are still in full COVID mode. I know our community's tired. I know they don't want a mask. They want this to be over, but it's not. When you see our staff members, please tell them thank you. They really need that right now. Our morale is really low. They feel like they're not being appreciated for their work because they're in the thick of it right now.
In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Breakup of the Chena River continues to send ice through Fairbanks, causing jams and fluctuating water levels. National Weather Service meteorologist Jim Brader says an ice jam at the Wendell Street Bridge Sunday morning rose water levels behind it about 4 feet before it broke up.
But that ice associated with that jam moved into an existing jam on the University Avenue Bridge.
The Wendell Street and University Avenue bridges are both in the midst of being replaced. Brader says associated pilings in the water at the University Avenue Bridge continue to catch ice and cause water to back up.
We don't expect flooding of any homes, but some backyards may get water in the low spots. And ice did get pushed up like around Pioneer Park at the boat landing and up on some of the banks near there.
Brader says the forecast calls for about normal temperatures this week with lows near freezing and highs in the mid-50s.
So this continues the sort of slow melt of the snow, which keeps us from having flood problems.
Brader says while valleys have melted out, higher elevations still have a foot and a half to 3 feet of snow. Looking at the region's larger rivers, Brader says much of the Tanana River has broken up, but the Yukon remains ice-covered.
I think the one area where we still have potential for breakup flooding is along the Yukon River.
And Dan Bross,